Okay, thank you. I'd like to start with some scenarios first. And you've heard one of them already. A 17-year-old boy has the penis of a 9-year-old. How does that happen? Girls in the United States as young as 13 and 14 years old are having mastectomies of completely healthy breasts. Why is this happening? NIH-funded research is examining the effects of kids as young as age 8 receiving injections for gender transition. Who is allowing this? Step back, talk about some definitions. What is gender dysphoria? It's a mismatch between a person's physical sex and their mind's perception of that sex. Leads to significant distress and clinically impairment of functioning lasting at least 6 months. And this is a real condition, and these kids, of course, deserve all the care and attention and love in the world. But we're concerned about medicalization. Most of these kids, as Ryan said, will actually grow out of this condition either through watching and waiting or help from a therapist or psychologist. There's a newer phenomenon of adolescence, particularly teenage girls and some boys who are suddenly developing this condition. Dr. Lisa Littman did an excellent publication about this. And there seems to be involvement. Many of them have neuropsychiatric conditions or, say, autism. Social media and YouTube and things like that, binge-watching YouTube videos of transitioners seem to be playing a role. Contagion seems to be playing a role. The opposite of allowing kids to grow out of this or helping them with therapists is gender-affirmative therapy, and Aileen went through that, but basically a social transition, puberty blockers, which I'll talk about, cross-sex hormones, or opposite sex hormones, and then surgical modifications. What is all this predicated on? Something called gender identity. This was defined in a court case as a person's core internal sense of their own gender. What's interesting I found in this case is they said that this gender identity is the primary factor in determining a person's sex. This is an ongoing case, and not biology. That's incorrect. Colleagues and myself wrote a letter to our main endocrine society's journal with concerns about this therapy, but also the diagnosis. Let's think about it for a minute. If your child or someone you knew had cancer, would you want a pathology result? Would you want imaging to prove the cancer before you give harmful chemotherapeutics? How about this? How about for the so-called transgender child, the gender identity? Can you find it in a blood test? Can you do testings of genetics, or can you do a brain image and find the gender identity in there? You cannot. There is no objective test to diagnosis, yet we're giving very harmful therapies on the basis of no objective diagnosis. This might seem obvious if you can see the slide. There are only two sexes. Certain science publications want to make you think there's more or that it's a spectrum. You can prove this to yourself through a thought experiment. Start with yourself as a fertilized ovum and work your way backwards. You'll find a sperm coming from a male and an egg coming from a female. And this is true of 100% of cases, now and forever in the past and forevermore. Sex is identified at birth. Nobody assigns it. Doctors don't arbitrarily assign this person to be a boy and this person to be a girl. And we all know how to identify it. I would say ask someone's grandmother who doesn't read these science periodicals and they'll tell you exactly how to identify boys from girls. Now, we divide sexual development into stages we call Tanner stages. And you see at the top there, Tanner stage 1, the male is on the left, female on the right. 1 is undeveloped before puberty. 5 is full adult development. 2 is the beginnings of puberty. So a pediatrician could recognize this through beginnings of pubic hair. As you can see, beginning to lengthen the penis, testicles, breast development in females. Later on, around stage 4, is where fertility is established. First period in females, sperm development, usually 4, sometimes 3. But those are important times to keep in mind. What governs this whole system is the endocrine system. There's a small gland that's at the top there called the pituitary gland, hangs off the brain, produces hormones, signaling hormones. You can see LH, FSH. These act on the gonads. So in the male, LH will act on the testicle to produce testosterone. You can see illustrated there. And in the female, LH will act on the ovaries to make estrogen. And it's these hormones which take the person through the stages of development and then are available in adulthood. Now, there are medical conditions where this process is interrupted. We call it hypogonadotropic hypogonadism. This is something an endocrinologist would diagnose and treat. There are also hormones which can cause this to happen. Medications like Lupron, you may have heard of. This is used for prostate cancer. It works in this way to stop the pituitary from making this LH and lowering testosterone and preventing growth and spread of prostate cancer. It's also used in early puberty. There's something called precocious puberty. This might start at, say, at age 4. And so doctors can use this type of medication to delay it to a more appropriate age, like age 10. What about using this medication for stopping normal puberty, say at 12 or 8? This is an off-label, untested, experimental use. It hasn't been through any FDA approval process. It's what I would call a chemical conversion therapy. You can see here illustrated our Endocrine Society is recommending for these kids to stop puberty at Tanner stage 2, which is just the very beginnings of puberty. And you can see they will not proceed through the other steps of puberty. This is what leads to infertility because they don't establish fertility. Other problems of sexual dysfunction on the I Am Jazz show, Jazz says, I don't have any sexual sensation. I don't have any orgasm. This is because puberty was stopped at this stage and never allowed to go forward. Okay, how young of an age are we talking about for puberty blockers? You can listen here to Ilana Scherer of UCSF Pediatrics.
As far as starting blockers, generally blockers are started at the first signs of puberty. It often can start like as early as like 8 at times or 9. And so those are kids who are going to be like in 3rd or 4th grade.
So in case you didn't hear, 8 or 9 years old, 3rd or 4th grade. And think of what you were doing at, or your kids at age 8, maybe building a snowman, maybe talking to snowmen, maybe thinking you were a cat or a fairy, something like that. Do we really know that the girl thinks he's a boy? Is really that the case? Is this the appropriate time to be starting these medications? More side effects. I went through some of them. You're going to disrupt the normal brain development that's happening with the sex-based hormones. It actually disrupts normal bone development because the sex hormones are important, so osteoporosis is a future risk. There are also neuropsychological effects. You can go yourself and look up the side effects of, say, Lupron. You'll see emotional lability, nervousness, anxiety, delusions. It even says monitor for development of worsening of psychiatric symptoms. Use with cautions in patients with a history of psychiatric illness. I've already said many of these adolescents have neuropsychiatric conditions. Professor Michael Biggs at Oxford, through Freedom of Information Act, found out what was going on in their Tavistock clinic. Children actually reported greater self-harm with this medication. Girls exhibited more behavioral and emotional problems, greater dissatisfaction with their bodies. Now, you would think, if you had these side effects of these medications, wouldn't you want to stop? Well, eventually they do stop, but they found that the limited studies they have, 100% end up going on, up to 100% going on to cross-sex hormones, which is the next. So cross-sex hormones or opposite-sex hormones, which are really wrong-sex hormones, will be the next stage. So if a female would be given testosterone. Just to give you an idea how high these doses are, normal adult female will have a certain amount of testosterone, say in the range of 10 to 50. Medical conditions can bring this up to 150. Tumors may make this as high as 1,000. They're recommending to get these levels in the 300 to 1,000 range. This is some 10 to 40 times higher than the normal range. And are there side effects from this? Of course there are. Both sexes have shown increased risk of myocardial infarction, death due to cardiovascular disease. That's males taking this estrogen, females taking testosterone. With the male, 5 times increased risk of deadly blood clots, 2 times increased risk of stroke. Females also been shown with liver dysfunction, hypertension, potential for cancer of the ovaries or breast. I want to make this clear. There's no FDA approval for either of these medications for this use. And even at the UCSF pediatric site, It explains there, that's highlighted, that there is no FDA approval for this, but they're looking to get it through doing experiments. Here's another example. So the next stage is surgical conversion therapy. This is a female who had a mastectomy, and you can see the drain tubes there. People have said, you know, isn't this a male, Dr. Laidlaw? And we're looking at the male pattern abdominal hair and the 5 o'clock shadow. These are the direct results of high-dose testosterone. This is from a publication. Dr. Johanna Olson Kennedy is doing a five-year, $5.7 million got a grant for research to study these hormones. One of the publications shows mastectomies done on girls. And you can see there is a couple of 13-year-old girls having mastectomies of completely healthy breasts, 14, there's five, and so forth. Now, can a person of 13 or 14 consent? Do they know what really that they want breasts later on in life? Can they get them back again? Let's hear what Dr. Olson Kennedy has to say about that.
We do know is that adolescents actually have the capacity to make a reasoned, logical decision. And here's the other thing about chest surgery. If you want breasts at a later point in your life, you can go and get them.
If you caught that, she said, if you want breasts later in life, you can just go and get them. Is that correct? Can you just get a new organ, mail order it, have surgeons put it in? You cannot. Just another, so for Jazz, and the question, well, why were this complications of surgeries that Elaine talked about? Well, if you stop puberty at Tanner stage two, as you can see, the penis length is very small, so they can't use the full length of an adult penis to make the pseudo-vagina. On the right, it just shows a section of colon or large intestine being put into place to make this false vagina. So that's why this is happening, as a direct result of puberty blockers. So what's the bottom line on this child-adolescent affirmative therapy? We don't know long-term outcomes. I've told you already some short-term problems, but it hasn't been tested from childhood forward. Medications are being used off-label without proper FDA risk assessment profile. The quality of evidence, if you look at the Endocrine Society's own guidelines on this for children and adolescents, it says right in there, it's low to very low quality evidence. This whole thing is an experiment on children. We're ignoring the voices of desisters and people who have come out of this and recognize their sex. And the NIH is allowing unethical research to be conducted on children and adolescents, in my opinion. And so myself and colleagues use Freedom of Information Act to get more information about this research study, Johanna Olson Kennedy at Children's Hospital Los Angeles, and found that in 2017, they actually lowered the minimum age for cross-sex, wrong-sex hormones. It was 13. They lowered it down to 8 years old. So imagine giving 8-year-old girls testosterone. They're in third or fourth grade. This is unbelievable, but this is going on, and you can see where I pulled the reference. Now, the question is, how young is too young? Before, they were giving cross-sex hormones at 16, then it was 12, now it's 8. And I look at this as an endocrinologist and say, you know, there is another way to stop puberty if you don't want to use these medications. Just remove the testicles and the ovaries. You could do it at age 4, for example. Remove the gonads. How could a 4-year-old possibly consent to this? And I was accused of you know, the slippery slope when I said that. But this, well, we're already down the slope. We're already down the slope. And who's going to stop this? Who will speak up for these children? And all of us need to speak up. Thank you.
In 2007, Boston Children's Hospital became, as its website brags, quote, the first major program in the United States to focus on transgender children and adolescents. Today, a dozen years later, more than 45 pediatric gender clinics have opened their doors for our nation's children. Parents are told that puberty-blocking drugs and cross-sex hormones may be the only way to prevent their child from committing suicide. In government-funded studies, doctors are performing double mastectomies on 13-year-old girls because medical experts deem such medical procedures necessary. Meanwhile, 17 states have passed laws banning medical professionals from helping a child to identify with his or her own body. And yet in all 50 states, doctors can prescribe testosterone to girls and estrogen to boys. Doctors can perform mastectomies on the healthy bodies of healthy girls. And already, parents have lost custody of their teenage daughter because they disagreed with doctors who wanted to prescribe her testosterone. Transition-affirming therapies are virtually untested, and they inflict lasting harms. And instead of providing parents with the medical information they need to make evidence-based choices, many parents report feeling bullied and pressured into affirming the transition procedures for their children. And so it's essential that we start a conversation on these medical therapies, these medical interventions into young people's bodies. And that's why we've assembled this closing panel of today's summit on the medical risks, the health risks to children. We have an expert panel coming at it from four different but complementary perspectives. First, we'll hear from Walt Heyer. And I don't want to say too much about Walt because Walt is going to introduce himself as he shares his story. But Walt is a prolific writer and speaker. He runs a website called sexchangeregret.com, where he has helped hundreds of people who have regretted their sex change procedures and have detransitioned to identify with their original bodily design. Next, we'll hear from Dr. Joseph Zanga. Dr. Zanga is the past president of the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American College of Pediatricians. He's the former chief of pediatrics for Columbus Children's Hospital, the former Catherine and Max Ray Joyner Distinguished Chair in Primary Care at the Brody School of Medicine at East Carolina University, and the former Chair of Pediatrics at Loyola University School of Medicine in Chicago. So please join me in welcoming the panel, and we'll hear from Walt first.
Thank you, Ryan. I appreciate this opportunity to speak today with this distinguished panel. I'm not a PhD, I'm not a doctor, but I want to put a human face on the destructive side of becoming a transgender, as I did for 8 years I went through the procedure. But we shouldn't be surprised when we hear about the early sexualization of children being involved with this that's growing to proportions that we have never could have imagined happening. But if we think back to how transgenderism started, it was Alfred Kinsey, Harry Benjamin, and John Money. They were pedophile activists. They thought it was totally appropriate for adult men to have sex with young boys. So if we can look into their thinking, we shouldn't be surprised at what we're seeing today. And this is what has transpired. These are the consequences of allowing this travesty and this ridiculous thing to start the way it has. And let me tell you, affirming children into a cross-gender identity is child abuse. Let's be honest. It's not physical abuse, but it's psychological abuse. It's emotional abuse, and it's sexual abuse. We cannot kid ourselves any longer. And our children are being destroyed. I, myself, was cross-dressed at the age of 4, 1944, 74 years ago. And as a result of that, I became gender distressed to the point to where I underwent gender reassignment surgery after struggling because of being cross-dressed in a purple dress at the age of 4. Those we cannot ignore how devastating it is to young people to cross-dress them and affirm them. Do not kid yourselves. I'm here as a witness to this, that I'm still today stand before you with a mutilated body and a life that was destroyed in many ways, redeemed by Christ, certainly, but destroyed because I was affirmed and told how cute I looked, how wonderful it was, and went to a gender therapist who said, all you need to do is have hormones and reassignment surgery. That was in 1981. I underwent the surgery in 1983 because they said this is the treatment for gender confusion. Wrong. It's destructive. It's not treatment. It's further abuse. This is the physical abuse, cutting off body parts and filling someone with hormones is the one of the most destructive things you can do. And it's not repairable. There's things that cannot be restored. I'm here as a witness to tell you we have to stop this nonsense. And further, fortunately, I looked into the stacks of the books when I was studying psychology at UC Santa Cruz and discovered that people who identify with gender identity disorder also have disorders like body dysmorphia. They have autogynephilia, transvestic fetishes. They have other psychological issues that cause them to behave as a transgender. They're not born transgender. That adults are perpetrating on our young people today, and our schools are complicit in this. Schools have become the activist indoctrination location for children. And fortunately, my life was redeemed and restored, and my website, Sex Change Regret, we've had the opportunity to reach out to people around the world, and we continue to help people every single day. We get emails from people, Walt, 6 days after surgery, I regret this. Can you help me? Can you get my life back? 3 weeks after surgery, 6 years after surgery, all the way up to two people, 30 years after reassignment surgery. It took me 15 years, Walt, to admit that I regret this. Can you help me? People today, in the hundreds, in the thousands, regret having been caught up in this madness. And thankfully, we're able to help them. And I plead with you to listen to the doctors and these messages today. There is nothing more important than a stable foundation of a country is the family. And this is an issue that's ripping families apart and tearing lives apart. We have to understand that a sound country, society, is built on families, and ripping them apart with this ideology is also destroying our families, and we see it every day in our schools. Thank you.
Where do I begin? You've heard a lot this morning. I'm going to give you some more. And I'm going to say a little bit about what we know, and then ask and answer some questions. What do we know? Well, we're going to talk about definitions. We're going to talk about science, or what's not science. Children's brains, a key thing that we all have to understand. Sex or gender change, and then what do the medical organizations in this country say about all of this? Gender dysphoria. God, what a term. Do we really know what it means? I'm not sure. I'm not sure that anybody does, but we use it very glibly. The American Psychological Association has decided this is the term that we're all going to talk about. But, you know, one of the things that they did say, do, is they made some specifications. A child who, particularly, and I'm going to talk about children, child, but it appears, it's for adults as well. It's got to be associated with significant distress or impairment in function lasting at least 6 months. And you have to appear with 6 of 8 different criteria before you can be diagnosed with that significant impairment of function, significant distress. I work with a lot of pediatricians and family physicians around the country, and have for 100 years now. On issues like this, they sometimes can't seem to be bothered with all of this minutiae. And a child who comes in and says, You call me John, but I'm really Jane. And a parent who says, you've been treating my son, who's now my daughter. And the doctor says, well, okay. Let me see how I can help you with this child who is in this transition. 6 versus gender. What sex? Well, you know, it's kind of like what somebody once said about pornography. You know it when you see it? It's what our body habitus is. It's how we look at ourselves in the mirror after we get out of the shower. It's our external and internal organs. It's the way we function. It's the hormones that our body generates. But it's something more important than that, or at least as important, and that is every cell of our body is the sex of our body. In every cell of our body, there's an X chromosome and a Y chromosome for males, and 2 X chromosomes for females. So, gender. Well, you know, for thousands of years, sex and gender were exactly the same thing. People obviously in antiquity understood that there were 2 X's for females and an X and a Y for males. Though we scientists didn't discover that until fairly recently. What is gender? Gender has no basis in science. It's a here construct. It has no basis in science. There is no science that says you can be any gender you want to be. You are male or female, and nothing that you do can change that basic scientific fact. Change the appearance. We can dress, we can look, we can have surgery, but we cannot change who we are. And that goes for our brains as well. And the children's brains, very, very critical in this whole discussion. Are we born with an encyclopedic knowledge of things? No, hardly. We are born with a pretty blank slate. Oh, yes, we do learn things in utero, but we're a blank slate. Our brains are plastic. They can be molded. And we start molding them from the earliest days. Parents teach their children, and children respond to subtle cues about love and feeding and toilet training and a whole host of things. And if a parent says to John, you really are Jane, or to Jane, you really are John, and starts dressing the child, as Walt said, in sex-inappropriate clothing, treating the child as if the child is the opposite sex, that's what the child begins to incorporate into their very plastic brain. And as they get older, they begin to think, yes, indeed, you know, mommy, daddy, they were right. Gosh, you know, mommy saw me putting on her shoes. And instead of saying, please, don't wear my shoes, John, you'll ruin them. She says, oh, John, don't you look cute wearing my high heels? We imprint that kind of message in the child's very plastic brain. And children, when do children's brains mature? When do they become fairly fixed, non-plastic, can't be molded so much anymore? In their mid-20s. Gosh, is this something new? Is this something we just discovered? Well, actually, we've known this for thousands of years. The first mention of it in any kind of written form was Socrates. Long, long time ago. And William Shakespeare wrote it at least one of his plays. The brain does not mature until the mid-20s. Children cannot make executive decisions. They cannot decide they can't decide what they want to grow up to be in life, much less whether they are boys or girls. And yet, we are saying, the medical profession is saying, oh yes, you're a five-year-old, yes, you can decide that even though you look like a boy, you're really a girl. That's craziness. And sure, maybe you want to ignore thousands of years of observation. But in the 1980s, late 80s, early 90s, throughout the 90s, we proved by MRIs and functional MRIs, by PET scans and a variety of other things, that the brain actually really doesn't physically mature until the mid-20s. We know this. And our organizations, our medical organizations, are very sincere about saying that a child, therefore, an adolescent, therefore, can't decide things like smoking. They should not smoke. They should not drink. They should not drive a car. They shouldn't do a lot of things because they are not mature enough to be able to do those things. And yet we say that a five-year-old can decide that they're the wrong sex? This is crazy. This is unscientific. This is malpractice as well as child abuse. We are committing uncontrolled experiments on our children, and that's dangerous. Oh, but wait. We're going to send them for counseling. Yes, as Walt said, you're not allowed to counsel anymore except to say to the child, well, Jane, you really want to be John? Well, fine. Let me help you to be John. That we're allowed to do. Why? Because government has passed laws that say that we are allowed to. We're not allowed, on the other hand, to say, no, Jane, you're going to grow out of this. You know, don't keep thinking this way. Let me help you to think the, no, that's not allowed. Our government is committing malpractice. They're practicing medicine without a license. They're telling us what we can and cannot do. Of course, we're acquiescing, and that's really dangerous. So we provide inappropriate counseling. Then we provide drugs, Lupron. All right, we prevent them from growing through puberty. There are adverse effects. They do things to the body which promotes the development of stroke. Increased body mass index, gain weight. Decrease in their high density lipoprotein levels, the good lipoproteins, the things that protect you from heart attacks. Now, a lot of this medical stuff is reversible. The mental health stuff is not. We've done again. We've said to the child, we can do the kinds of things that help you to achieve your goal of changing your sex. And then, of course, there's the testosterone, the cross-sex hormones, testosterone for girls who want to be boys, and estrogens for boys who want to be girls. And both of those and other drugs that we can use have adverse side effects. And some of those side effects are physically as well as mentally not reversible. So we're stuck. And what are the American Academy of Pediatrics, all right? The largest pediatric organization in the country, 67 or so thousand members. The decisions are made by a group of about 14 people and then promulgated to the rest of us. Well, those are elected people. So obviously we must be electing people who believe what we believe. Hardly. In the last election for president and other officers of the academy, 14% of the electorate voted. And many of them probably didn't know who they were voting for or what they were voting for. Now, this is common in all of our medical organizations. They've been taken over by people who are politically correct, and in some cases, interested in, and I say this about individuals, not the organization, this is a way to make money. And it's unfortunate that we're doing these uncontrolled experiments on our children. I liken it to, an adolescent coming to me, usually female, who looks very thin, pale, malnourished perhaps, who, on a chart is really very much underweight. I said, "Oh, doctor, I'm fat. I really, really need some medication. I really need some diet pills. And I need some recommendations on what I can take to purge me if I do eat, because I cannot gain any more weight. This is terrible. Do I prescribe medication for that? No, I don't. This child is suffering, just like a child who thinks they're the wrong sex might be suffering. They have functional impairment, just like the child who thinks they're the wrong sex might have some functional impairment. Do I give them diet pills? No. I counsel them, and I send them to someone who can provide the appropriate counseling so they understand what they're doing to themselves, the harm they're causing. And the government has never said, I can't do that. No, we need to do something. And you have to help us. You have to tell your pediatricians and the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology and the American Academy of Family Physicians and others that they cannot keep doing these experiments upon our children. It's time to stop. It's time to speak up and tell everyone that what they should know, that boys will always be boys and girls will always be girls, and we have to help them understand why and how to do that. Because if they go through puberty, if they get into their adolescence, more than 90% or 85 to 95% of them will decide, I really am satisfied with my body. I really am a boy. I really am a girl. And that's the way I'm going to live the rest of my life. Thank you. I don't need this surgery. I don't need these medications. I don't need to remove good functional body parts. And so I thank you for listening, and I thank you in advance for going out there and preaching what we have been teaching all morning. Thank you.